Window World is proud to present Kevin Keatsman Has Issues, simply the best for less at WindowsKansasCity.com.
After a sluggish start, the Chiefs poured on the Pittsburgh Steelers and went at 42-21. Why weren't the Chiefs ready at the start of this game? I don't know. It's a disturbing postseason trend with the Chiefs that can't continue the next few weeks if the Chiefs want to win the Super Bowl. But man, when they're on, they're on. After five scoreless possessions, the Chiefs score six straight touchdowns, including Patrick Mahomes with five touchdown passes in a 10-minute and 31-second time span. Amazing. Mahomes, 30 of 39, 404 yards, five touchdowns. It was an unbelievable performance, even against a mismatched team like the Pittsburgh Steelers, who probably didn't belong in the playoffs. We got a lot to cover on this episode of KKHI from the postseason, including the Dallas Cowboys and the controversial end to their game and the potential coaching change in the aftermath. The Bengals coach, Zach Taylor, making a pit stop after the Bengals beat the Raiders on his way home, presenting a game ball to Cincinnati fans. We've got the details of that. And of course, all the matchups coming up this weekend. The pretenders are gone. The teams that shouldn't have been in the playoffs are toast. This thing's about to get real. Chiefs and Bills, Sunday night, 5:30, play for the fourth time in about 15 months. Stan Weber is here to break it all down for us and talk some football on KKHI. It's brought to you by Roberts Robinson, Chevrolet Buick GMC in Excelsior Springs, where customers say, we just make it easy. And that's true. They'll make it easy to get in a new ride online at robertsrobinson.com. Whether you're looking for a Chevy Silverado, GMC Sierra, Buick Enclave, they've got them all. Or they can order it from the factory for you and have it in a few weeks. No matter where you live, they'll deliver it right to you. Roberts Robinson, Chevrolet Buick GMC, in Excelsior Springs, and Chevrolet, find new roads. 360 Document Solutions, Mark Lindquist and his team, I'm telling you, this is the first call you should be making here in the new year. Get your business in line to be more profitable and more efficient. Mark can help. He's been an expert at this for a long time. Really, they can help a lot with IT solutions, mailing systems, phone systems, copiers, printers, toner, any of these things that make your office go, they can help you with your costs, bringing them down. They can get you out of current leases, and they can help you be more efficient. Make the phone call. When you talk to Mark on the phone, ask him about Kevin McCarthy as the new Speaker of the House after November. It'll be a great conversation, I promise. 913-745-5344, online at 360documentsolutions.com. And Back 9 Development, online at back, then the numeral 9, development.com. Kansas City, Lawrence, Topeka, Manhattan, looking for a room addition, custom home, commercial property, Back 9 Development can set you up from start to finish. They're really good at what they do. You want to see the portfolio? Log on to the website and see some of the beautiful homes that they have built and some of the commercial properties. And, of course, the Solheim Condominiums at Grand Mere on the Corbett Hills Golf Course in Manhattan. Nothing quite like it anywhere. Back9Development.com. Stan Weber is here to break down what we saw this weekend in the NFL and set us up for the divisional round in the postseason. Hit it!
Sports, politics, life. Amazing Garage Floors presents Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. Online at AmazingGarageFloors.net.
Well, let's not waste any time. Stan Weber is with us to break it all down as the Chiefs move on to the divisional round after a whopping performance by Patrick Mahomes. Ooh, five touchdown pass, and the Chiefs move on past the Steelers 42-21. Hello, Stan. How are you today?
I'm doing great, Kevin.
You know, I guess the most shocking thing to me is the Chiefs looked inept. They had five straight possessions where they didn't score, and then they scored touchdowns on six straight possessions, including a Travis Kelce touchdown pass. This team is something else. What do you make of it?
I don't know how they are able to turn it on when they do and just explode into fifth gear after muddling around in almost reverse. But they have done it in a 2019 run to the Super Bowl, right? I mean, it doesn't get any worse than what happened against the Houston Texans. And then they kind of had their little example of that in the first quarter when the Steelers end up scoring, when the Chiefs, you know, make mistakes, give them a chance, get off script, do something that's unusual, and end up getting hurt by it. So here you got the Steelers just in a miracle situation, up 7-0, somehow slowing the Chiefs down. So maybe they can stay in the game for a while, at least get to halftime, and then just take it quarter by quarter to see if the upset is in play. And the Chiefs just reminded us why we said, oh, there's no way the Chiefs are going to lose to the Steelers. Once they decided after that turnover, let's go, they never shut down and advanced themselves tremendously. I thought the team gained a bunch of confidence, and it's crazy as it seems. I think it ends up being advantageous for the Chiefs to have played the Steelers in the playoffs rather than getting a bye. Because if they had a bye, even though they'd be rested and only have to win two games, they'd both be at home and all of that, Kevin, they would have had the questions lingering for another week. Like, what about that Cincinnati game? And boy, I don't know, if we didn't do what we should have against Denver, is that real, or is our defense struggling? This was playoff intensity. You got to practice what playoff intensity is about. And I think the Chiefs took to it tremendously. Pittsburgh was no threat. We knew that all along. Their offense is so bad. It's a touchdown every time they get a first down mentally. So Steelers aren't going to score. They're not going to beat you. It's just going to be, when are you going to turn it on? But the level of confidence that they gained, Kevin, I think the swagger is back. And I think the Chiefs are much more dangerous today than they were if they wouldn't have played a game this week.
Okay, we've had a common theme over the years, Stan, with this team, and that is if you start slow, eventually it's going to hurt you. That doesn't mean you're always going to lose. You referenced the Houston playoff game a couple of years ago. This wasn't a good start. Chiefs didn't look like they were ready. Pittsburgh looked like they wanted it more for quite a big chunk of the first half. And then the lights come on, and here go the Chiefs. When we look at the way they start some of these playoff games, and I'm trying to remember the playoff game where the Chiefs weren't behind. I mean, that really is the way to look at it now, is I don't remember when they weren't behind. What's the reason for that? Why do the Chiefs always start slow in the playoffs?
Well, I don't know, Kevin. That's a great question. And as I sort through, I really cannot see a constant theme other than the theme. The result is that they aren't leading, 14-0 at the end of the first quarter because of the better team, and then cycle their way through a nice win with the other team coming back a little bit at the end. I mean, you've seen that a million times in the playoffs. We're better. We beat you, and then you score some late scores, backdoor cover, whatever you want to say. You're looking at the odds, but you know you're the better team. They've not done that. They have looked susceptible to being upset, be beaten, not be as good as the opponent. All those words have been in play for many of their playoff games, and they are on year three. Now, this isn't just one game. We are in year three, and we're seeing the same thing. But somehow, some way, they have obtained a certain level of confidence that don't worry about that, almost like an NBA player. The NBA players know it's all about the fourth quarter. It doesn't matter until you get there. The Chiefs kind of have the attitude, it doesn't matter until we turn it on. And at some point, we're going to, and we're going to overwhelm you. And I'm just not sure why they get off to the slow starts. There's no consistency, because recently we've seen the Chiefs not do that in regular season. Okay, this year, down the last half of the season, the Chiefs had things planned out in their first drive of the game. They motored down the field. Took a while, right? 8-10 plays, 12-play drive, touchdown Chiefs. And then suddenly everyone goes, why does Andy's plan work on the first possession, but not so well for a while after that? So this isn't what we've seen. This is more of that playoff. You know, go back and put on the tape of 2019, but I have really no reason to understand. Maybe the opponent is so on edge that they think they have to play a perfect game and be ready and play their fourth quarter right away. And maybe they just think we are going to lose the game. I mean, Pittsburgh ought to think that. The Texans should have thought that. Maybe the Titans. I don't know, Kevin. It's amazing, though, that when they hit the accelerator, you take a first quarter that you just throw in the trash, right? You lead. From an offensive perspective, you've given up 7 points and you've done nothing. You don't look like it's easy to get a first down. Look like the Steelers got some answers. Obviously, Watt is an amazing player. The strategy's working okay. And yet he ends up with 5 touchdown passes, 400 yards passing. I mean, that just doesn't add up. You think, 2 touchdowns, 270 yards, fought back from a little adversity and won the game. Congratulations. No, when they go, they just leave you in the dust. And it's an amazing, powerful thing that they believe is going to happen, and it does time after time. Sometimes you think they're going to get burned by this, but so far has not been a big problem.
Okay, I'm going to offer up that maybe Andy Reid is part of this, and I'll give you an example in this game on Sunday night against the Steelers. I think the game plan's important. I think these coaches are smart. They know what they're doing coming in. There was on the second drive of the game, the Chiefs had about 4th and 1. It was a long one, maybe 4th and 1.5. Near midfield in a scoreless game. and Andy punts the ball back to Pittsburgh. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, it's the Steelers. If you're going to stop them, and you know you're going to stop them, stopping them at midfield, if you don't get the first down, to me, there was no threat. If the Steelers got the ball at midfield, I don't care if they failed on this fourth down. Why didn't Andy go for it? Well, he got conservative. He was thinking to himself, we're better than them. They're not going to score on us. We're going to punt the ball and play old school. And I really kind of felt like maybe the players were buying into that. I think maybe the vibe of this team was, just don't screw up. We're playing Pittsburgh. Let's just play traditional football. But then after the defensive touchdown by Pittsburgh and they're down 7-0, Andy throws his hands up and says, to heck with that. Let's open this thing up. Well, that's when they're best, isn't it? When they just open things up?
Yeah, you know, I think your theory holds a lot of weight in this one game. I was kind of sequencing it over a longer period of time. But, you know, what you're saying makes a lot of sense because they saw the tape. They go, there's no way the Steelers are beating us. I mean, the players are looking around going, there's no way. We don't have to play even an average game to win this game. So I understand. Let's just kind of play conservative, let the game unfold, and we'll win this game. And let's don't take it for granted that we're going to blow them out. So, you know, just a nice little 21-3 win would be enough. Let's just do it Andy's way, old school way. But you're right. It seemed like Andy had to say, darn, we're down 7-0, and that clock's ticking, right? I mean, the second quarter is burning. It's not like it's the first minute of the second quarter that the Chiefs are behind 7-0. And so when he just said, let's go, let's run our offense to the highest level, the Chiefs immediately took off. It's a great job by Patrick Mahomes to respond when you ought to be more down on yourself and question yourself more than ever. It seems like that's when he pops and plays his best. That is an unbelievable quality, off the charts quality. He may have that quality better than anybody else. You know the John Elway games where he came back and won in the fourth quarter, but that's not the first sign of adversity during a game. John Elway didn't just make the worst interception and then on next drive just stick it right in your face. He just at some point won the game at the end, right? But Patrick Mahomes has the capability of just going, and I agree with you. I mean, when they just hit it and say, let's believe in our offense, let's try to attack, that's the best mode the Chiefs play in. It doesn't matter if the score is 0-0. They definitely are a better team when they attack. And we talked about this all year long, the development of Patrick Mahomes, the gunslinger Texas Tech mentality that he brought in the NFL, and Andy Reid did not hold him back and tell him that was bad, actually pushed him and said, I want you to throw interceptions in practice. I want to see the limits to how crazy you can get so you know where that limit is. But we still want you to play wild and crazy. Well, that worked very well for Patrick Mahomes and for Andy Reid until the Chargers first and then Tampa in the Super Bowl said, we're going to play the umbrella coverage, cover two, make you play disciplined football, make reads, not just go off of athletic ability and different platforms of making plays. You're going to have to play fundamental football. And we saw that create a struggle early in the year. But what do we say, Kevin, during mid-year? Patrick's buying in. He's totally learning how to be a different quarterback, understanding that he's got to make the right reads, get the ball to the right person at the right time underneath the coverage, let him run, and those kind of things. And we have seen him develop, and now he's a better quarterback. And now they can be in high gear and him not press the football. You know, he's not throwing in a double coverage downfield to Tyreek Hill just because he wants to air one out. How about the little 3-yard throw that ends up being a 30-yard gain just because he reads that too many, you know, two guys run to the flat with McKinnon and just dumps the ball to the wide receiver and he takes off and runs. So I think we got full speed attack mode Chiefs with the quarterback no longer being Texas Tech version. Does that make sense? I think he is now ready to be a coach on the field and start doing like Tom Brady does. Okay, I got the call, could throw deep, but you know what? With this coverage and with the way the defense moves, I'll just get the ball out right now, and they still become lethal. This is what I've been saying for weeks, Kevin. Cover two is not 13 guys on the field. Okay, there's not some fake rule that, you know, they sneak guys on the field. There's only 11. Cover two's been played against forever. There are holes in it, and you can still attack. It's just that they've got to understand the philosophy to use, and I think Patrick Mahomes is completely bought into it, and here we go. And we, you know, I brought this up. Were Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill a little bored by catching some 2-yard balls and seeing what could happen? Well, not in the playoffs, not when it mattered. That touchdown against the Chargers took all the boredom away from Travis Kelce. Now when he catches a little short passes, you know what he thinks, Kevin? Why am I not going to go? How about that touchdown at the end of the first half? Just a normal little play, and he catches it and goes, nope, I'm going to turn this into a touchdown. A little short throw when he hadn't had hardly a catch all game. He jets upfield. So I think that they're now buying into, you know what? I'm so used to the ball being thrown downfield and it seeming like it's some fun, but Andy's got some cool designs where when I catch it, there's grass around me, and I can have some fun still by taking off. So I think right now, playoffs experience, Patrick Mahomes leading the way and buying in. He bought in when the record was, 3-4? He totally bought in that I can change how we play. I get it. We can beat this cover two. Let's just revamp our mindset. Let's play it a little differently. And I knew, I've been saying for many weeks, that the explosiveness, Kevin, is going to come back. How about the throw over the top to Byron Pringle? Did you see Tyreek Hill catch the ball behind the defense? I mean, that's old day stuff, right? No. They're starting to work that coverage now where they're going to get back to being able to throw the ball deep. I just thought this was great confidence builder for the Chiefs to have played Pittsburgh. It's almost better that they played the game against this cruddy Steeler team to up their game. I think they're more dangerous in the playoffs because of it.
I agree. 5 scoreless possessions. Then Mahomes throws 5 touchdown passes in 10 minutes and 31 seconds of clock time. Simply amazing, Stan. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. 30 out of 39, 404 yards, 5 touchdowns. And please help me. Why in the world, when you have this football team, I guess they're trying to put stuff on tape, future opponents, whatever. Mecole Hardman as your quarterback, handing the ball to Williams and a double fumble. It's so head-scratching. When you've got the game in hand and you want to give Travis Kelce a chance to throw a touchdown pass, great. Give him that chance. Put it on film. Let the Bills see it. By the way, I thought on that play, Mahomes goes running left. I don't know if anybody noticed this or not, but as Mahomes was in motion on that play, he was running backwards. They've got a play in the arsenal where Kelce throws to Mahomes and Mahomes is still the quarterback on a backward pass. It's in there. It's on film for Buffalo to look at this week. So I understand why they do some of that stuff. But the game's at hand. When the game's not at hand, why do you have Mecole Hardman as your quarterback? What was he even thinking on a play like that?
Well, let's just I have no problem with that conclusion. But let's think real quickly. They had how many drives did you say with no yards, no points?
5.
I mean, you could argue that he needed to look somewhere else in his playbook. Things hadn't worked yet. That we look now like it's the easiest 40 points you've ever seen, but if you go back and stop the tape at that time and just jump into a very analytical, knowledgeable, and a fair person like Chris Collinsworth, okay, and say, what do you think, Chris? I think he'd say, yeah, it's okay if the Chiefs try a few different things right now. I mean, nothing's worked. So maybe we get Mecole Hardman around the corner on a quarterback run after a zone read, and we pop it for 30 yards, and we get something going. So that'd be my only answer is we can't just assume it's easy now to go, well, why didn't they just start hitting that 40-point mark right away? Well, they were sitting on 0 and down 7, 0-0 at that point and not moving the ball. So maybe that's why. Maybe he was really looking for a changeup, and then he thought the changeup might be, let's get those guys back at the wide receiver and running back positions, and let's let Patrick gun it and get going. So the Chiefs are really, really explosive and good. It is incredible. Like you said, in that short a time period, less than 11 minutes of game time, they do this. It's amazing. They are a great, explosive offensive football team when things are going well. But they want some cuteness in there, Kevin. I mean, you got to admit.
They do.
Some of the fun was, a lineman catching a ball, Travis Kelce throwing a pass. I mean, that Mecole Hardman fumble situation is just part of the cuteness. And I was telling someone the other day when they were evaluating coaches, and I said, you got to remember that there are just a minimum of 100 things you get. There are going to be weaknesses in someone's portfolio, but don't forget all the evaluation. And with Andy right now, he has bought in with Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill. These guys want to have fun. He's totally got a locker room that believes in him. And part of it is we're going to have fun. Even though it's the NFL, not going to get stodgy. We're going to make stuff up. We're going to have fun. And we're going to do that, and you can't have it all those ways. You can't have a little play like they did to lose the ball and not have the other plays where they're having so much fun. So you just got to live with, he wants to be cute, He wants to be innovative, and he wants the players to have fun out on the field. And so far, the net results are pretty darn good.
Yeah, really good. And, you know, the Allegretti touchdown was a lot of fun to watch. But can you, if you think the defense is fooled by the tackle eligible, how about the officials on that play? Allegretti just grabs the dude that he's supposed to be blocking, right? Well, he becomes a receiver. He just grabs the defender and throws him to the ground and then is wide open for a touchdown. I'm like, apparently the refs never saw it. On what planet can any offensive lineman just grab the other guy and throw him to the ground? I mean, it was unbelievable. Not as a blocker or not as a receiver, but it was great. I mean, that was a fun play. It was fun to see. I don't know if you noticed that or not. I was like,
holding offense 10 yards. That's what it should have been.
Yes, it's not
but
even.
It wasn't.
It's hard to even call it holding. It was tackling. It was like, that should be a 50-yard penalty. That shouldn't be a 10-yard penalty. It was so intentional. It's like, I'm going to throw you to the ground, and I'm going to catch this pass. And the refs are like, okay, that looks good to us. That was crazy.
Yeah, no, it was. It's but they're having a good time, and you know, they got a legitimate opponent coming in. That's the real news. I've been as slow to believe in Buffalo as anybody, and I'm not talking about seven touchdowns or every touchdown in every possession, first time in NFL history. I'm not overbuying the what they did to New England. I'm not talking about that. I'm just saying they've been here before. They're growing up. They respect the Chiefs. They've been to Arrowhead twice. What, championship game last year, and then earlier this regular season. They have familiarity with the Chiefs. Their whole focus has been on the Chiefs. They know that they're not legitimately an AFC power until they do two things. One, get rid of New England. And they had to do that by losing the first game and winning two, right? So they can now look with a straight face upwards and say, Chiefs, we're the best team in the AFC East. We're the best team in the AFC over the last few years. Not New England, not anybody else. And we're ready to play you. So Buffalo is a legitimate opponent. And the Chiefs are coming in hot and ready. But I do respect Buffalo and how hard this game will be.
Well, I'm going to give you I don't know if this is a hot take or what this is, but I just believe this because, you know, you and I have been on the same page for a long time. Quarterbacks matter. There are four teams left in the AFC, and I'm going to go ahead and handicap this and say that I think the Titans are the least likely team to make the Super Bowl. I think they've got the weakest quarterback. I don't think it's close. And I think any of the other three quarterbacks of these other teams, whether it's Burrow or Allen or Mahomes, can easily – one of them could easily throw their team on their shoulders and get to the Super Bowl. And I just don't see Tennessee that way. Am I crazy?
Well, it's a good place to start. And there's not a lot of holes in your logic. It's just, you know, what the Tennessee Titans are a team that has to do everything together as a team. And, you know, unfortunately, your bias and knowledge of this is too strong because you've seen that team. You know, if it's a Dick Vermeil or a Marty Schottenheimer or an Andy Reid team with Alex Smith, that's what they are. You know, they are, you know, those Chiefs teams of 13-3 were good, Kevin. And you can blow them off and act like they weren't. They were good teams, but they had to play all together at a high level to win the game. And that's the Tennessee Titans. Head coach, really good. Components of their team, excellent. You know, will Derrick Henry be back? What difference will he make? I don't know. Tannehill, I like his feistiness, but I like his feistiness for a guy who gained 1,000 yards as a wide receiver at Texas A&M and got beat out at quarterback. I mean, I like his comeback story, but you're right. He is not at the elite level that these others are. He cannot go win the game by himself. So Tennessee, gear up, baby, because they're going to try to win a 21-17 game, and they're going to try to do it three times, Kevin. That's what's going to happen. And you know how it is. You've watched those Chiefs games, right? You don't like the odds of being able to flip the coin three times and it come up your way every time. And that's why, you know, it's pretty hard to bet on Tennessee. They are a tough out. For anybody who plays them, I mean, they may just gnaw on the Bengals and show them you're just a young team who's on the road, we're rested, and we're tough and physical, bye-bye. Wouldn't be surprised if they do that for one game. But to do it two straight times in a row to get to the Super Bowl is going to be very, very hard. And Tannehill does not have the capability of putting the team on his back and ripping through it. So you're right. This is the Chiefs teams that you've seen over the last 25 years that were really, really good. Even number one seed teams with all these different quarterbacks and saying, you know, not Mahomes, not Lynn Dawson, can the Chiefs play today and win? And, man, they got to do everything right. And what's the score going to be, Kevin? 21-17, 17-13, right? I mean, it's never – why don't we light it up and score 35 points? That's not in play most likely for Tennessee. So I have no problem with your take. They are in a tough position to try to do this two times and win. That's why the bye was so important for them. To have to do it three times would have really hurt their odds. So they're dangerous. They're solid. But, man, they do not have that extra gear that these other teams do, because you look at the Bengals and ability to throw the ball downfield, pretty elite. They have plenty of other mistakes, though. If you can sack the quarterback, you know, I see Tennessee still winning this game over Cincinnati, because I think that they will cause pressure to a young football team, and that's what they are. Well, Cincinnati, 31 years since they won a playoff game.
Buddy,
Zach Taylor's a new young coach, you know?
You've been on Joe Burrow all year and said this is the guy, okay? There was a lot of discussion earlier this year that Justin Herbert maybe is as good as Mahomes. Maybe he's the next best quarterback in the AFC. Derek Carr obviously played well down the stretch and gave the Raiders a chance. It's not like other teams don't have good quarterbacks. But if you rank the top three quarterbacks in the AFC, and I won't try to do it in order for you, aren't these the three? I mean, as we look at the next 15 years in the AFC, isn't it Mahomes, Burrow, and Allen? Isn't that really what – isn't that sort of like Brady, Peyton Manning, and Roethlisberger were for so many years?
You know, I would lean that way. I mean, Justin Herbert could turn into a super good quarterback, but he also may turn into Phillip Rivers, who puts up giant numbers, is dangerous all the time, but doesn't have the ability to just win those close games and carry his whole team over the top. So, you know, I'm a Joe Burrow guy, no doubt about it. And I'm not going to try to back down on that. I don't know where he is in his development, Kevin. That's the thing I want to take into account here when people are listening to this. I'm a Joe Burrow guy as a finished product, like you said, over the next 10, 15 years. Count me in with him in the elite level. And he already has those capabilities. It's dangerous. But there is a developmental stage. Not everyone gets to jump to full level Patrick Mahomes. Okay, Patrick Mahomes' first starting year, he took off. But he had Andy Reid by his side. Okay, if he were playing with Andy Reid, maybe his development would go faster. I still think the Bengals are a young group, and so, you know, it's not just Joe Burrow, it's the whole football team. He's going to be that. The question is, can he be that this weekend against Tennessee? And that's where my questions come in. I'm going to be high on Joe Burrow no matter what happens this weekend, even if they lose to Tennessee.
All right, before we get to the ending of the Cowboys game and the Cowboys game, I love football stories, not necessarily about the game, and I love Donna Kelsey, Travis Kelsey's mom, who was in Tampa for Jason Kelsey's game. They lost, got on, it looked like a Southwest flight to Kansas City, got here, and got in about the first quarter, she got to the game. After the game last night, she was the first person to ask Travis a question in his news conference. The Chiefs set it up for her to ask the first question, and it was about Travis throwing the touchdown pass, where he said, "I promised you, Mama, when I was 5 years old, I was going to be a quarterback someday." He said, "It took me 9 years in the league, but I finally did it." I just, you're in a football family. I think that's really cool, and I thought it was cool the Chiefs let her ask that question in the news conference. Normally, that's not something that teams would do. I love football families. I can't imagine what it's like to be Donna Kelsey. She must be, she's got two sons that have each won the Super Bowl. That must just be incredibly fun for her.
Yeah, and they're all pro level, right? And I think as a parent, the thing that she probably appreciates more than anything is how these young men or older men now, they're not the youngest guys anymore. They're NFL veterans. The fact that they root for each other so much, because you can have a family and have success and have a great relationship between parent and child, and yet the children say, you know, hey, I'm in Philadelphia, I'm in Kansas City, I got my life and busy doing things, and I better be focused on my career. What I think that she's got to love, and it's pretty cool about the Kelsey family, is they are connected, man. And those two boys that we know about in the public realm are rooting for each other in a big way all the time. The respect level that Travis Kelsey has for his older brother, who showed him the way at Cincinnati and is just a star offensive lineman and center for the Philadelphia Eagles, a real leader, is pretty incredible. Older brother, kind of natural. But it's also cool that he looks back to his brother Travis and goes, man, you're the superstar. You know, you're playing an elite position tight end, and you're killing it even at a level that I'm not able to do. And to see just back and forth them rooting for each other, and the mom watching that, I think as a parent, that would be even the coolest thing of all.
So here's what
they not only individually getting after it, they root for each other in a big way.
But here's what I didn't understand. They asked for a police escort for her at KCI, and Mayor Lucas said, I'll do better than that. I travel with police escort. I'll pick her up myself. Now, I don't know if he actually did that or not, but look, they're trying to get her to the other game. Can you explain to me how these two sons between them probably have $200 million? I don't know what, you know, flying on a private Learjet costs from Tampa to Kansas City. It can't be much more than $25,000 or $30,000. These guys have like $200 million between them, and they couldn't put Mama on a plane? She's flying Southwest with everyone else trying to get to Travis's game? How's that possible? I mean, Mahomes has a free jet. Patrick Mahomes has a free jet. Him and Kelsey are best friends. Hey, Patrick, can I borrow your jet? I got to get my mom here. I was shocked to see her on a Southwest flight. That was crazy.
Well, there's the other aspect, Kevin, about parenting. It may sound crazy to you, but she might have downplayed it so much that it didn't really cross their mind.
Yeah, maybe.
Like their job, and this is kind of a compliment to Travis, right? What is his job? Focus on the playoffs, Kansas City Chiefs. You know, he's got work to do, and the most important work of the year is every session that he studies tape, every rest that he gets. Don't be distracted by tickets or anything else. Get your treatments and all of those things. I bet the mom understands it so much that she may even downplay that she's going to try to pull this off. She may have said, hey, I'm going to be down there in Tampa to watch your game. You know, I'm sure the Chiefs are going to win. I'll catch them next week. And may have just kind of quietly made that second leg of the trip. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at all. I mean, these parents understand and even overstate the pressure. I mean, I hear my mom once in a while saying something about one of us kids, you know, oh, you ought to see what they have to do at their work. I'm laughing at no, it's not that hard. I mean, what are you talking about? But I think the parents are just a little overprotective. So I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't even think that. I don't think that they said, no, I'm going to save 25,000. It's like right now they're probably going, Mom, why didn't you tell us? We could have flown you and you could have comfortably, because I have this fun tailgate you could have went to, you know. I just think it probably went right underneath the radar. These guys are focused on the game.
It's great stuff. All right, before we get to the Cowboys, one last football story, and that is Bengals coach Zach Taylor, who after the game, he's promising many playoff wins now in Cincinnati. And be careful, because we've seen a lot of good teams get good and win a playoff game and never get to the Super Bowl, never whatever. I don't know where they're headed. They're going to Tennessee. They got a great chance to win the game, I think. That, to me, looks like about a 50-50 game. This coach, with his kids on the way home after the game, stopped at apparently there's only like one bar between the stadium and where he lives. He stopped at Mount Lookout Tavern with a game ball and delivered it to all the people that were inside Mount Lookout Tavern. His sons were with him. And for some reason, the punter was there, or he took the punter with him. They were all there and it went viral and they shot videos of it. He didn't stay long. He just went in and presented a game ball to the fans. Man, I love stories like that. That is really cool. I mean, and it's meaningful. He said when he first got the job, he's been thinking about this for 3 years, Stan. He said, when I first got the job, I said, if I win a playoff game here, I'm going to give a ball to the fans. I don't know how, but I'm going to figure it out. He stopped at Mount Lookout Tavern in Cincinnati and gave a game ball to the fans. How cool is that?
Super cool. And just another football family. He grew up around it. And it's crazy, Kevin, when I sit there and watch that I know Zach. Zach was a starting quarterback in Big 8. Big 12 player of the year for the Nebraska Cornhuskers right at the end of their run in the early 2000s. You know, they really haven't been great since then, but he was a quarterback that took him on that run. And I went down after the game because I had driven to Lincoln and went down and said hi to him afterwards because his dad was an assistant football coach at K-State when I played. So I know Zach. I knew Zach. I know his parents. And it's a football family. His dad played at OU, won at a high level. Got into assistant coaching, one of the nicest guys in the world. You know the Manning family. You see the parents of the Mannings. Reminds me of that. Just so supportive and not overly into it, like, you know, patting themselves on the back like they're an NFL coach or anything. Just enjoying their kids. And he has another son who's working his way up to possibly be an offensive coordinator and maybe be on his way to being a head coach as well in the NFL. But Zach, you know, just crazy when I'm watching him on the sideline going, I know that guy. I mean, I really do. If I know, I wouldn't bother him now, but if given it 4 weeks or so and they're out of the playoffs, I could call Zach Taylor And there's a decent chance he'd pick up the phone and talk to me.
I know.
You know, this is a football family. I know, Kevin. My point is that when he got that job, that was a giant step to be to compete against the Andy Reids and Bill Belichicks. And just to be fair, you know, you're not ready for that. Yeah. So I like the fact that he's got some swagger to him. That's a great sign for Cincinnati fans because he's got the humbleness to him. Okay. There's no doubt his being, even as a quarterback of the Huskers, as an assistant coach in the pros, his family, they are a very humble group. He's got that. But to win in the NFL, you got to have a swagger, man. You got to believe that you can beat Bill Belichick. And I thought that's really cool. The way he's acted, the way Joe Burrow's acted this week, would be on the side of being cocky, right? I mean, they're a little more confident than maybe they should be. But, Kevin, I'm telling you, that's a really good sign for the Bengals because Zach needs some of that. He does not need to be the little humble guy that I know growing up. He needs to be a stinking NFL head coach who says, we're going to win a lot more playoff games. So I'm really impressed with his confidence level because it wasn't easy. They didn't win when he first got there. And he could easily have cycled out and already been fired. The way this new coaching sequence goes in the NFL, you get fired fast. So he almost got fired, and now he has enough confidence. So the things he's doing, Kevin, knowing him and you know, literally knowing him and watching him grow up, I'm impressed that he's getting a little cocky. Yeah. He needs some of that.
No, it's fun. They're a fun team to watch, and Joe Burrow is going to be trouble for the Chiefs, I think, in the AFC for a long time. I mean, they're just going to – the quarterbacks in the AFC now, it's absolutely crazy. All right, it's really easy. The Cowboys fall 23-17 to the San Francisco 49ers in the best game of the weekend, really. Although for a while it looked like the Niners were just going to control this thing. I always felt like Dallas was going to come back, that this would be a game. I just felt all week there's no way this isn't a one-possession game somehow, some way. And it wound up being that. And it would be very easy to say, look, the Cowboys had 60 minutes to go win this game. It shouldn't have come down to the last play or a controversy with the official or anything that happened on the last snap of the game. It doesn't change the fact that NFL games all the time come down to one play. The Raiders had a first and goal situation in their game with a chance to win or get to overtime against the Bengals this weekend. So sometimes the games come down to that. It's what they are. We've kind of joked all year. I said it. I said, when the Cowboys are eliminated this year, there will be controversy. To me, the controversy isn't the ref. It isn't spotting the ball. It wasn't any of that. And Dak should have handed it to the umpire, whatever. The controversy to me is the darn play call. What are you doing running your quarterback with no timeouts left up the middle of the field? They could have had three shots at the end zone from the 40-yard line if they wanted them and get a pass interference or make a catch or whatever, and they ran that? What in the world was that, Stan?
Wow, you bring up so much, Kevin. First of all, let me go back to the Raider game real fast, just because I want everyone to think along in calculus-level football. Raiders got the ball first down inside the 10. What did they do? They ran up and spiked the ball. I was sitting there, my son Landry's at home, turned to him and said, the one thing they should not do is spike the ball. You don't lose the game on time, you lose the game on downs. And guess what? The Raiders had one less down to try to get into the end zone. That spike cost the Raiders.
Terrible.
The chance to win a game.
Yes.
Bad strategy. Okay. Now, advance to the Cowboys game. So many different ways you can look at it. But in the late game situation, the Niners did a pitiful job of allowing the Cowboys to move upfield as quickly as they did in the chunks that they did and finally corrected their mistake right before that play and rolled up their corners and said, you're not going to be able to run a 10-yard or 15-yard play and get out of bounds. You're going to have to stay up the middle. So now the Cowboys have a choice. I was indifferent, to be very fair, I was indifferent because Landry and I didn't just stay quiet. We literally talked this through and said we could Hail Mary it here multiple times, two times at least, right? Rather than one Hail Mary throw or one try to score a play, you could do it from here from two because now that the 49ers have lined up in this defense, you're not going to get the ball out of bounds. Or you can get upfield and do what the Cowboys did. So we both concluded we would do what the Cowboys just did. Now, how can you do it? He could have thrown a slant pass rather than run it and would have saved a second or two. But to go upfield, gain about 10 yards, stop, and then run up and spike the ball. Don't let yourself gain 20 yards because you run out of time. So probably the mistake that Dak made, number one, is he ran 17 yards, I believe, when he slid. He probably should have stopped at about 12 yards because the odds of getting a touchdown, Kevin, go up tremendously if you can run a normal play from the 25-yard line, 30 on in, than if you Hail Mary it. So I agree that the Cowboys' philosophy was run one legitimate play and our chances of winning go up. I thought that was true. I thought their strategy was sound on that. Maybe Dak should have stopped earlier. Maybe I think he should have thrown a slant pass to CeeDee Lamb or someone and let him run up and do it. And so I have no problem with the strategy. They were in a bind. I have no trouble throwing the end zone two times. And like you said, maybe three. I also think that's a very sound strategy. Either one of those, in my mind, are equally there. I want to point out something, Kevin, I think will be interesting for the fans, okay? Procedural. This is very important. The NFL, at some point in, recent history, within the last 10 years or so, moved the umpire from the defensive side of the football behind the line to over to the side. You're very familiar with that, mm-hmm. right? So the umpire is now behind the quarterback, just like the referee, and not behind the line of scrimmage. And that's because they wanted a more open football game, right? They wanted to be able to throw passes, and they also didn't want that referee to be used as a pick guy because that's dangerous. They were running right next to the official, so the defender would run into the official, and they'd get a legal pick, right? They wanted to open up the game, and they did move the umpire to the other side. That meant that the evaluation of holdings changed tremendously, Kevin. When Tim Grunhard was snapping the ball, that umpire was lined up 6 yards looking right at him behind. And as you moved upfield and blocked, you got closer to that umpire. So we understand that that's changed. But do you realize, Kevin, here's the important thing I want to get to. You all are familiar with the umpire being over there in pro football. But when they made that rule change, do you realize that in the last 2 minutes of the game, the umpire went back to the spot that he used to be at? He went back to that spot, Kevin, so that they could officiate the game appropriately in a 2-minute drill. You follow me on this?
Yeah.
Sometime the NFL, and I don't know when they did this, the NFL must not have that rule anymore because the umpire was behind the play rather than on the other side. So fundamentally, the officials have a problem. When they made this rule, I know this is true. When they made the rule, when they got down to the 2 minutes, the umpire went back to the other side so he could be in the action and spot the ball more quickly and not affect the game by having to run however many yards, this time like 30 yards. So the NFL, either these guys didn't do it that way or the NFL rules changed, I don't know, but it really cost the Cowboys. He should be on the other side of the line, and he can get there on time. The officials on the side could also spot the ball, Kevin. Doesn't have to be the umpire. It took him forever. He bounced off Cowboys. They should have stopped the game and said, hey, our umpire did not. There's no way they shouldn't have not spotted the ball within 10 seconds. I'm just talking about the officials. I'm not saying that's why the Cowboys lost, because the chances of them making a 24-yard pass aren't that good, Kevin. I'm not acting like the Cowboys will win. But I want to point out how the officials work and how the rules have changed. And if they now don't, in the last 2 minutes, move the umpire, you see one of the weaknesses. But the referee still screwed up. When he went down, there were, 9 seconds left? The sideline official could run in and spot the ball. Just to wait for that umpire who was standing still 30 yards downfield, acting like he is totally unaware that this is a 2-minute situation, and then bouncing off the Cowboys when he's trying to get there is unacceptable. The officials blew it. They should have got there, and there should have been 1 second on the clock after the spike, and then the drama would have built to another level, right? How much fun would it have been for America, who wasn't rooting for either team, just to see one more play into the end zone, to see how that would have went. But the Niners are the better team. The Cowboys are loosely coached because Jerry Jones won't let the coaches coach. There's no discipline, and that's what you get. That's what you get when you don't do the little things. John Fossil, here's the craziest thing. John Fossil is a famous special teams coach, Kevin, and you saw him on the sideline. He makes the decisions for the Cowboys. When Cowboys didn't go for fourth down and they sent the punt team out, everyone's like, what the heck? Well, you know what he wanted to do? He wanted to fake punt it with his punter. And then after that play, did you see him humble himself and say, great job, get the hell off the field? No, you know what he wanted to do, Kevin? He wanted to run another play. He thought he had a trick play with 11 guys on the field, including the kicker, rather than letting Dak Prescott come out. That cost him another 5 yards. Might have cost him the game. I mean, when they kicked the field goal to get the 10th point, you might think that was controversial. Like, hey, why 16 down? Why don't you score 2 touchdowns, get 2-point conversions, come back that way, rather than boot a 52-yard field goal? You know who's making these decisions? John Fossil. Go watch. He's the one in the ear when McCarthy stands there and acts like he doesn't know what's going on. There's someone just talking in his ear. When the officials do something wrong, guess who's yelling at him? John Fossil. I mean, the organization is so put together weekly that when the heat is on, the glue pulls apart because it's not, it's not, the machine is not properly glued together.
I have not liked McCarthy forever. Okay. He had Aaron Rodgers and won one Super Bowl. And to me, it wasn't wasted years in Green Bay. They won a lot, but I kept watching them do what the Cowboys did yesterday. The Packers would always get eliminated on something controversial or stupid or mismanaged by McCarthy, whatever. I don't know how he got hired other than he's got some experience and he's probably a yes man, and whatever Jerry Jones says, he follows it. There are rumblings out there today he could be losing his job. You're the biggest Cowboys fan I know. Do you want the man fired? I don't know what the solution is. I don't know if it's Kellen Moore. I don't know where they go next, but do you want McCarthy fired?
If he could keep the same coaching staff he has now, it's acceptable because it's not all his fault. It's Jerry Jones' fault for not letting him coach. You know, you forgot about Stephen Jones. Now he has to say yes, man, to Stephen Jones as well. Even in the meetings, coaches' meetings, those two guys are sitting there in the coaches' meetings. You're saying, well, why wouldn't they? Well, I'll tell you what. It's the equivalent of your parents sitting there in your bedroom with you and your wife. Okay, that's what it's like. You know, you and your wife, you think maybe you go in the bedroom, you might be able to talk and do what you want to do. But no, Jerry and Steven literally are in the coach's meeting, circumventing any continuity. So it's not all his fault. Now, to answer your question, I will say this. Don't just fire him to fire him. But if they fire him to protect Dan Quinn, the defensive coordinator, from leaving, if Quinn has a chance to get hired at another organization, which most people believe, the Cowboys ought to hire him and tell the head coach, sorry, McCarthy. You know, you just don't add anything to the program. You don't. I mean, he doesn't clock manage correctly. He has a big play sheet in front of him, but he doesn't call the plays. I mean, the special teams coach tells him what to do in game situations. So if you lose Mike McCarthy had COVID one game, right? And my wife said, oh, wait, are they missing their coach? I go, this will be the easiest answer ever. It will have absolutely no effect on the game.
Right, right.
Zero.
Right.
Not up or down. Just zero effect. I hear he's a nice man. He's someone that we can be proud of from around here. He's a legitimate football guy. But it's most importantly that the Jones family does not allow their coaches to coach. There's no discipline or anything else. But I want Dan Quinn to be the next head coach. So, yeah, McCarthy can go if Dan Quinn is the new head coach. If it's not Dan Quinn, don't tell me, Kevin, that there's just a new head coach, because that doesn't do any good. You got to get used to the Joneses. Here's the best example, easy one for all the fans to follow. If you don't follow the Cowboys, you want to know what I'm talking about. This organization wants to bet. Jerry Jones wants to bet on optimism and the best of people. He thinks he can bring out the best of people. Okay? And Randy Gregory is a really elite pass rushing, number 94 for the Cowboys, Nebraska Cornhusker, who got caught smoking weed at the combine. So his draft position fell down. He's now had other things happen in the NFL where they suspended him for whole seasons, right? I mean, he's not a guy you can count on. But guess what Jerry Jones wants to do? He wants to count on this guy in spades. I mean, this is his perfect example of, I'm going to get talent, and we're going to blow the world away. And so when Lawrence and he and, 11 is out there rushing the quarterback for the Cowboys are a deep pass-rushing unit. But guess what? He's not a guy he can rely on. He starts the game lining up off sides, then moves a little closer and gives San Francisco a free 5 yards. And at the end of the game, he's the guy that got called for defensive holding, tackling that blocker. And that's a stupid call by the officials as well, because that's not what that rule is made for. It's made for nose guards grabbing centers and guards and not letting him get to the linebacker level. But still, he grabbed the guy and tackled him, Kevin, and got a penalty. He started the game with dumb penalties. He finished the game with dumb penalties, and he had him in between. That's the kind of guy Jerry Jones forces down your throat. So Kevin Keatsman's the new head coach of the Cowboys. Forget adding discipline, Kevin. You take what he gives you.
Yeah.
And he goes, this dude has talent. And you go, but he's got a pea brain when it comes to football and life, okay? He's not doing the right thing. Do we want to bet on him? And Jerry's like, yes, because I'm going to pat him on the back in the locker room before the big game, and I'm going to tell him, we believed in you, we stuck with you through all those hard times, play your ass off for us. And what happens? They break down. So this is a Jerry Jones way. Over-optimism, lack of discipline. It's not as much Mike McCarthy's fault as you want to say, but I'm going to jump on and say the net result's the same with me and you. I want Dan Quinn to be the next head coach. Don't let him get away.
Sounds like a winner, just like you, Stan. Thank you, as always. It was a lot of fun this weekend, but the best football's still ahead. I mean, there were some games that weren't very good this weekend, but the best is ahead. There's a game Monday night, too, that's going to be a lot of fun between the Cardinals and the Rams, but everybody left is good. The cream has risen, and we got nothing but good teams and good matchups. This is going to be a great weekend. Thank you very much for your time, as always.
Okay, thanks, Kevin.
All right, take care. He's Stan Weber. That is our football feast. He's all over it, man. And I love the way Stan breaks it down with the Dallas Cowboys. He's as big a Cowboy fan as you will ever meet. And it's not as simple as just McCarthy out. You got to get the right guy in, and somebody needs to stand up to the Joneses, and I think that's right. But you just knew the Cowboys season was going to end in controversy. Stan's appearance on Kevin Keatsman Has Issues is brought to you by BStock.net, your playoff headquarters for Samsung televisions, on sale now. Lower prices than anywhere you will shop, online or in person, in Olathe at 14680 South Flaming Road. $449 for the Samsung TU7000. You can jump on this right now and be ready to go for the Chiefs game this weekend. Pick it up this week. Lowest prices anywhere. BStock.net, 14680 South Flaming Road in Olathe. Finch Knife Company, online at finchknifeco.com. This is a great startup company here in Kansas City. They've only been in business a couple of years. They designed the coolest pocket knives you've ever seen. Made with bone, wood, mother-of-pearl handles, they're beautiful collector pieces, or carry one every day. If you love a great pocket knife, you're going to love Finch Knives. Online at finchknifeco.com or visit Teague Tractor and Farm in Belton. That's Teague Tractor and Farm in Belton. Keep life from getting dull with Finch Knives, online at finchknifecompany.com. And Merriam Body Shop, email after email after email I get from listeners who say they went to Merriam Body Shop to get their car detailed, cleaned up for their wife, or maybe you're thinking about spring cleaning it here in a few weeks. Go ahead and make your appointment for the 1st of March. Get set up with Justin over at Merriam Body Shop. If you've had a fender bender, broken taillight, scratch on the side of your car, and you want to get it fixed, these guys will do it right for the price they say. Merriam Body Shop, 913-362-1198. Okay, full slate of games this weekend. We have a Monday night game as well in the NFC as the Cardinals will be playing the Rams. I like the Rams in that game, but I've not been a big Cardinals guy. I don't really see it. I've never seen it with Kingsbury. I think the Rams have some pedigree, some players that have been in this spot before. I think we saw that in some games. I think we saw it in the 49ers. Stan pointed out last week about the 49ers. Hey, listen, they're healthy. All these guys playing and playing well right now are the guys that made it to the Super Bowl 2 years ago. He's right. They did. And that showed up. They were ready to play in Dallas. They got a lead, and they were the better team. That's exactly right. Is that the same case with the Rams on Monday night against the Cardinals? We'll see if the Cardinals are ready to make that step. The Rams have struggled. They've stubbed their toe a little bit down the stretch, but I do like the Rams in that game. The weekend schedule goes like this. The Bengals play at the Titans at 3:30 on Saturday. The night game is just a tremendous Saturday night game. The 49ers at the Packers. On Sunday, it's the winner of tonight's game, either the Cardinals or the Rams, at Tampa to take on the Bucs. And, of course, the Bills are coming to Kansas City to play the Chiefs at 5:30 on Sunday evening. It will be the fourth meeting between the Bills and the Chiefs. Well, in two seasons, but really, if we want to look at it this way, I think it's in about 14 months. That's going to be the fourth time they've played in 14 months. This is getting serious between the Chiefs and the Bills. Of course, the Bills beat the Chiefs earlier, and Kansas City's playing at a higher level now. It's the playoffs. Again, we've seen over time in the NFL, the teams with the experience that have been there tend to win these games. That's the best thing the Chiefs have going for them. When I watched the Bills and I watched the Bengals this weekend, they both looked younger and faster than the Chiefs. Just watching them play, it looked like, uh-oh, these guys' rosters, we know the Bengals have more weapons than the Chiefs. Patrick Mahomes, I think the number yesterday was, while Mahomes was throwing for his 400 yards against a really bad team, I think six different players caught four passes or more in the game Sunday night. Okay. He's spreading it around, and it's not that Kelce isn't great and Hill isn't great. The Bengals' weapons are ridiculous. These other teams, we can't look at this anymore like, oh, the Chiefs are just better than everybody. They have better players. I like the Chiefs' A game because of the way their defense is played. I cannot judge their defense off their Sunday night performance against Pittsburgh because the Steelers stopped themselves. They're a horrific offensive football team and ultimately a team that did not belong in the playoffs. This thing is real against the Bills, okay? The Bills have a tremendous defense. They've got a quarterback that is, I don't know how many he ran for the other night, but man, when he gets out of the pocket and runs, he's hard to tackle. He gets big chunks. He doesn't scramble for 3 yard gains. He'll scramble for 30. And he'll be running down the field like a freight train with a cornerback or a safety trying to tackle him. This is a tough assignment for the Chiefs. There is nothing easy about this. No double fumbles. If the Chiefs go five scoreless possessions in this game and turn it over for a defensive touchdown for the Bills in the first half, what do you think the score will be? It was 7-0 against the Steelers. It's going to be 21-0 if the Chiefs do that this week. They're going to be down 21-0 if they start this game like they started against the Steelers on Sunday night. They've got to execute better. They have to do everything right the rest of the way. This is now big boy football. The best teams are still playing. The Chiefs can be the one seed. I like Cincinnati's chance, 50-50 at least, to go to Tennessee and get a win. The Chiefs can beat the Bills. They could easily play. They could easily be playing the AFC Championship game at home again. And that's obviously the goal. But really what you have is you have the potential to play three more football games this year. You've got to play your best football in all three of them. There is no more sleepwalking through the first 20 minutes of a game and having five possessions where you don't score and fumbling a ball and letting your opponent's defense score a touchdown. There's none of that. That's not going to work. It worked a couple of years ago, but the gap was way different then. There wasn't much, and the AFC teams now are just much better. These are legitimate quarterbacks that weren't as legitimate a couple of years ago. Joe Burrow's the real deal. Josh Allen's the real deal. Tennessee has the best, I guess you would say, team. I still handicap it this way. I think the Titans are the least likely team to make the Super Bowl of the four, just because I think their quarterback is the fourth best of the four teams left in the AFC. So it's about to get real. It's about to get wild. Chiefs play 5:30 Sunday. Bills at Kansas City. Fourth meeting in two seasons in about 14 months. Great stuff. And we thank Stan Weber, as always, for joining us to talk a little football. We thank you for listening to Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. And please remember to hit that like or follow button. Makes a big difference. Spread the word. We're out here doing it. We appreciate it. It's football time. It's going to be football the next few weeks at KKHI.
Thanks for listening to Kevin Keatsman Has Issues, presented by Roberts Robinson Chevrolet Buick GMC. To get exclusive patrons-only podcasts, receive a weekly newsletter, and attend in-person patrons-only parties, visit kkhasissues.com and become a patron today. This has been a production of Crooked Tail Media Incorporated.